Hello and welcome to the Sobre Mesa podcast. My name is Alan Maguire. This weekend I went out and about with my microphone and I went to Secret Kingdoms, the only 100% English bookshop in the centre of Madrid in Barrio de las Letras. And shop owner David and I took the opportunity to discuss a few more unusual books about Spain that you often wouldn't find in your average Waterstones, or some of them that we haven't even spoken about on the podcast. I hope you enjoy the selection we spoke about and enjoy the episode. And I'm inside the bookshop Secret Kingdoms, the only English bookshop in Madrid. And my guest today is bookshop owner David. So welcome to Sobre Mesa, David.
Thank you very much, Alan. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast.
So today we're going to take a look at a selection of unusual books to look at about Spain.
As you so kindly say, we are the only 100% English bookshop in Madrid with new and used books. I should give a shout out to Desperate Literature, who have a wonderful selection of English, Spanish, French, German, Italian, and I think one or two other language books just off Plaza de Opera. They've got a Shakespeare and Co. connection.
So we've got a wide range here. We're going to go chronological order.
Absolutely.
And I think our first book is by a very well-known author, Miguel Cervantes, but this is not Don Quixote.
No, these are slightly less well-known works by Miguel de Cervantes. He was very much of the time of the golden age of playwriting in Spain. People will have heard of Tirso de Molina, for example, and Calderón de la Barca and Sueños, Sueños, Son, and so on through the golden age. So he turned his hand to writing plays as well, but his plays were based on his experience in captivity. As many people know, Cervantes fought at the Battle of Lepanto and lost one of his hands, I forget which one. And a little while afterwards, he was captured and taken to North Africa, to Algiers, into captivity. And he wrote two plays based on the experience, The Banos of Algiers and The Great Sultana. And these reflect the extraordinary mixed Islamic, Christian, North African society that he lived in, and the renegade culture as well. It was a very floating society of people who came to make their fortune essentially as pirates in North Africa, all over the world. So you had Russian Islamic pirates out of the port of Algiers and all sorts of things. Now, Cervantes, I think people say, and at least until very recently, that Don Quixote was the biggest-selling novel ever, and is still
one of the first novels.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I'm actually halfway through it.
Oh, good.
Fantastic.
But at the time that he was writing, and a little while afterwards, there were some wonderful female writers out there, particularly perhaps in her of his generation, Maria de Zayas, or just after his generation, and for 200 years. She was right up there with Cervantes in terms of the number of editions published and the popularity of her works. Well, she was writing quite modern stuff. She started out writing classic love stories, but with experience of life and greater boldness, perhaps, as a writer, she began to write tales not only of love, but tales of disillusion. How love can go wrong, how hard it was to be a woman at that time, and how stacked the decks were against you. In the stories of love. And perhaps partly because of that, she was an extremely popular writer until the remasculization of Spanish literature in the late 18th, early 19th century. And she disappears from view for quite a long time. But amazing writer and very well worth reading. We talked a bit about the late 18th, early 19th century. And there's a current Spanish writer, Maria Dueñas, who's probably most famous for The Seamstress. My most favourite book that she's written is A Vineyard in Andalusia, which actually starts with the collapse of a rich family in Mexico, the heir's flight to Cuba, all sorts of shenanigans in Cuba, before a very complicated love story ends up with rescuing, together with the wonderful female lead character, a vineyard in Andalusia. For a kind of slightly magically real, slightly gothic, slightly over-the-top saga of 19th century Latin American and Spanish life. It's well worth a read, or a most enjoyable one. And as we move through time, the next book I'd like to talk about.
Completely
nuts.
Yeah, you sent me the, because like we were talking a bit before about, you know, what books are we going to choose?
Mm.
And Giraffes on Horseback Salad doesn't cry Spain to me, but
no,
absolutely. Does sound very much Salvador Dali.
And it is, absolutely. Salvador Dali had an endlessly fertile and extraordinarily surreal mind, as indeed did some of his friends. It's not necessarily well known that Salvador Dali and the Marx Brothers, Harpo, Groucho, and the other Marx brother?
Yeah, it's not Carl, but yes.
Yeah, could have been Carl. We're great friends with Salvador Dali. And
what?
Salvador Dali set out to write a screenplay for them. And the screenplay is called Giraffes on Horseback Salad. And all those elements are indeed included.
Wow.
It was sent to Hollywood, and the poor old Marx Brothers and Salvador Dali were greeted with exasperated disbelief by the Hollywood moguls, who told them they'd essentially created something entirely unfilmable. And they were probably right.
Wow.
The screenplay was almost forgotten about for many, many years, until quite recently it's been turned into a graphic novel, which I have in my hands here.
Yeah, yeah.
And is remarkable. You can see Salvador Dali bashing away on a typewriter that's actually in flames with the, I think, the legs of a sea serpent gathering Groucho Marx, who's riding on the back of a swan while throwing a guitar over his shoulder, with the other two Marx brothers and strange floating eyes behind them.
Yeah.
Pretty much sums up the story of Giraffes on Horseback Salad, quite rightly called here the strangest movie never made. But the 20s and 30s weren't just fun and games and surreal paintings and Marx brothers.
Yeah.
It's all getting a bit tough in Spain. The writer I'd like to talk about briefly is Gerald Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
He was a contemporary of and a friend of the Bloomsbury set in London. So think Virginia Woolf, think Lytton Strachey, think that gang. But he decided to to emigrate to Spain, essentially. He wanted to dedicate himself completely to writing. Unlike a lot of the Bloomsbury set, he wasn't well off.
Right.
But with the difference between the UK and Spain at that time, he essentially had enough to buy a tumble-down shack in a village in the mountains to the south of Granada.
Oh, wow.
And just about had enough to live very simply for 20 years down there.
Uh-huh.
He was visited by Virginia Woolf and Lytton Strachey while he was down there. There's a lovely set piece in south from Granada about how Lytton Strachey, who was a very Oscar Wilde kind of character, liked his comforts, was carried on muleback across the mountains from Granada to visit his friend. He only went once, which probably says...
Yeah, yeah.
And while there, Gerald Brennan immersed himself completely in Spanish culture. South from Granada is his autobiography, his time there. Doesn't include some of the spicier aspects of his time there. He did have children that he perhaps shouldn't have done.
While
he was down there. But it does give a great insight into Spain in the 1920s.
And what else did he write?
Well, his great works are probably The Spanish Labyrinth, which is a detailed, and as you can see, a doorstopper of a book on the build-up to the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
Opening it at random, I'm seeing the words the Carlists, the Socialists, the Anarcho-Syndicalists, the Anarchists, the Agrarian Question, the Army and the Syndicalist Struggle.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, with those chapter headings, just taken randomly from the book.
And how's it, framed, that book?
I think with a great deal of sympathy. He was a man of literature, and it's well worth, if you can find it, getting a kind of copy, which is actually new, but I think has been around the house.
Right, okay.
It's well worth getting hold of Brennan's The Literature of the Spanish People, which is an amazing review of Spanish literature from its beginnings to our own times. Speaking of our own times, that takes us neatly on to the post-Civil War period and some of the great writers who've been operating in Spain since then. We couldn't have this conversation without talking about Almudena Grandes.
Definitely. They're about to name the torture station after her.
They are indeed. Yes, absolutely. Yes, they're getting on with that finally now, I think. She's Madrileña.
Uh-huh.
Comes from not so very far away from here.
Yeah, Chalatin, right?
Yeah, right, absolutely. And she's written a number of books. I've got two of them here to share with you and talk about a little bit. One is The Ages of Lulu, which is a spicy story of liberation. It's among Alma Denigrande's first books, written when she was very young. And the era of transition in Spain is sometimes called the era of destape as well, almost literally getting everything off your chest. and The Ages of Lulu is a kind of slightly politicized 50 Shades of Grey about the liberation of a young Spanish woman.
Right. Okay.
Her transition goes on around her, which is a fun read. The Frozen Hearts, a more mature and much longer Alma Denigrande's work that we've got here as well, is a longer saga about the consequences of the Civil War in Madrid and beyond, and about how it echoes and how the conflicts have to be resolved and struggle to be resolved within families from the time of the Civil War until today.
Yeah, she took very much, she was quite political in her
opinion,
right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, she didn't try to hide anything.
I think that's why it's taken a little while for the decision to rename the station to have been put through.
Right, okay.
Properly, I think.
Yeah.
It's getting there now.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Moving on to more recent still, Ben Lerner, a poet, a novelist, doing very well at the moment, spent, as a lot of us have done, his expat years in Madrid. And he came out and was a struggling writer. Living just above the Atocha station. So again, ties in with Alma Denigrande's quite nicely.
Yeah.
And we've got copies here of his leaving the Atocha station, which is already becoming a bit of a classic.
It's an interesting book, because I think it shows a side of the kind of museum arty scene for younger people.
Yes.
And it's almost, it's very much, it's interesting how he talks about, you know, kind of posturing and things like that. And also being, you know, lost in a language that's not your mother tongue as well.
Yeah.
I really did, it's one of my favorite books.
Great. About, I think a lot of people in Madrid can identify with that.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And the literary scene in Madrid is close to my heart, particularly with the bookshop up. And people like the Madrid Writers Group meeting here and creating their own masterpieces of the future is
quite a thriving community.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. And speaking of groups that meet here and current authors that are publishing now, I thought we could finish looking at a couple of authors who are coming to Secret Kingdoms to talk about their work very soon. First up, on the 20th of September, we've got Brett Hetherington, who's Australian, living in Barcelona, has written quite a lot of journalism and pieces on the transition in Spain, particularly sympathetic to the struggles that Spain's been going through since 2008, and the crisis, although when a crisis has been going on for 15 years, it's hardly a crisis, but there we go. And he set out one day to travel through Spain and to discover the unsung Spain, the Spain that we don't talk about so much.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's a wonderful book. There's some very nice set pieces in there. Talking with a gypsy down in Andalusia on the bridge in Cordoba. There's exploration with a North African immigrant who's making his own way, filling a shopping trolley up full of scrap metal and selling it each day, and is extraordinarily pro-Spanish and patriotic in the process, which is quite fun. And he'll be coming to talk about discovering Spain as a foreigner, which again is something that we're all very close to.
Yeah.
20th of September. And then getting back to Dali, not exactly full circle, but close, on the 28th of September, Tim Parfitt is coming to talk about his completely off-the-wall crime thriller, The Barcelona Connection, in which an art detective goes to a patho just outside Barcelona to validate a newly discovered Salvador Dali painting, needs to do further investigation, pops it in his boot, and is then violently mugged at a petrol station, knocked out and wounded, 4 o'clock in the morning, wakes up a couple of hours later to find the car gone, the Dali gone, and a dead body next to him.
Wow.
And it only gets more confusing, violent, and political from there on in, as you'd well, track it down as the G7 meet in Barcelona.
Oh, wow. I'm a big fan of Tim's first book.
Oh,
Load of Bull.
Load of Bull. Yes, that's great.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a memoir.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, I read it when I first moved to Madrid,
mm-hmm.
and I was teaching in lots of different offices around the sort of center, around Barrio Salamanca and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I come across this book. I think it's set in the early 90s.
That's all right. Yes.
He comes here to basically set up the Spanish version of Vogue.
Yes.
And it's just hilarious because it's just, you know, you're seeing the eyes of 90s Spain through
absolutely
very much higher class areas.
Yeah. Yes, it's the Pico saga in it.
Yeah. It's really funny. Really, and I was just seeing these stereotypes. Some of them stood in front of me just, to, you know, probably 10, 20 years old.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's a book close to my heart.
It is great fun. Great fun, yes. Yes, we'll have a copy or two of that at the event as well. No, it looks like it should be a really, really good fun event. And we've got a number more. We try and keep busy. Normally have an event or two each week. I think I mentioned the writers group that meet here every Tuesday. Every last Friday of the month, we have a philosophy group that meets to pontificate. Well, not pontificate. We chat about the great questions of why we all here. What's it all about?
But you don't have to be an academic philosopher, right?
No, not at all. Quite the reverse. Yes. We come in and I think the most recent one was indecision. What can we do about it? Is it useful or not? And what do we really think? We agreed to differ.
Well, I should probably make the decision to stop the podcast there, but thanks very much for your time, David.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much, Alan. Much appreciated.